British Army. Once we crossed the border, we had no power. I think we've a bit of power now.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Hello, and you're very welcome along to the latest episode of Warriors, the GA podcast for you, the 42 members. I'm Fintan O'Toole, and this week, as the Munster Senior Hurling Championship finally prepares to start for 2020, our guest is a man who has a long association with that competition in Tipperary's Len Gaynor. Now, Len was a player and manager with Tipperary, and he also had a really interesting perspective on Clare Hurling, having taken charge of them for 4 years until Jurlochnan then took over and led the county to Munster and All-Ireland glory in the 90s. The big reason we're chatting to Len is that he has a new book out chronicling his hurling career. It's called Chisel from Ash, written with Tipperary journalist Shane Brophy, and is available through Hero Books. So just to give you a taste of Len's hurling CV, as a player, he won 3 All-Ireland senior hurling medals with Tipperary in 1964, 65 and 71. You can add to his honours list 5 Munster Senior Hurling medals, couple of National League wins, 3 Railway Cups and an All-Ireland Under-21 medal from back in 64. With his club, Kilrowan McDonoughs, he won 3 Tipperary Senior Hurling medals in the 70s, and he was actually the manager of the club for all those successes as well. And then he was solely manager in the 80s as they won another county title, and they went all the way to their greatest ever success in 1986, winning the All-Ireland Club Hurling title in Croke Park. He had a couple of other big successes on the club front in Tipperary with a few other sides. Then on the county scene, he's been Tip Minor Hurling Selector, Under-21 Hurling Selector, Senior Hurling Selector, Intermediate Hurling Manager and Senior Hurling Manager, along with those 4 years in charge of the banner that we spoke about. So there's lots to get through in our chat. We talked about all those successes, along with family life, how he's got on without hurling, which is such a big passion for him in the 2020 season that has been interrupted so much by COVID-19. And there's also some lovely memories where he talks about watching his daughter, Kira, win 5 All-Ireland Senior Camogie medals with Tipperary. Let's get straight to it then. This is episode 28 of the Warriors podcast with Tipperary's Len Gaynor. So as I mentioned, Tipperary great Len Gaynor is our guest today on the Warriors podcast. Len, thanks a million for joining us.
You're welcome.
So you have a new book out, Chiselled from Ash, that you wrote with Shane Brophy, looking back on your hurling career, but as a player and a manager, how did you find the whole experience looking back at everything you've achieved over the years?
It stirred up a lot of memories, things I had forgotten about. You know, your young days, a lot of it disappears over the years, and I had a lot got. And then when Shane was interviewing me and asking me questions, it stirred up memories for me that, you know, brought me back to a time that was completely different to what we have in Ireland today. I was born in 1944, so there was no electricity in the where we were in out the country. There were no motor cars, no tractors, no running water in the houses. It was a different, completely different world. And, you know, it has improved and it has got better during the years, down through the years. But I just think myself now, and I'm looking back on it, if the older people came back now and saw what we have today, they'd be mesmerised. And 'tis great that the country has developed and come on so much, and 'tis unfortunate, I suppose, that we're after running into this virus now at the moment, and it's really putting a damper on things, and really people are upset, I think, and they feel like there's a bit of a fog over the country, and things aren't good at the moment, but hopefully we'll come through.
Absolutely. I suppose definitely the last few months for a lot of people have been maybe a big period of reflection, particularly people of a GA persuasion, because there's been so little, I suppose, activity. I suppose at least the club matches have kind of got going again over the last couple of months. How have you found 2020? Have you missed hurling a lot since I suppose it was stopped in the middle of March?
Oh, I have, yeah. I'd be at matches every Sunday, and any chance I'd get, I'd be at the matches, club matches or county matches, especially the county matches. I wouldn't miss any of those, but I'd be at a lot of the club matches as well. But it's a big loss. It was part of our lives. And we just took it for granted as well. It would always be there. But all of a sudden, it's not there. And I suppose showing it on television like is a big help. And we only hope that the new rules coming in this evening or whenever they come in now tonight won't rub out the GAA matches. that we will be still able to see them on television and that, and hear them on the radio. Because I think as bad as things are, and you know, and the loss of not being able to go, it is a big help to be able to see them or hear them on the radio or on the television. And it would be an awful blow to people, I think, people's morale, if they were gone completely. So I'm hoping that they will stay and that we will be able to enjoy the games and that as much as we can. It is a difficult time for everyone. I think the older people, which I would be in that category, are finding it hard. I find it hard now, even though I'm on a farm and I have lots of time to get out the fields and a few jobs to do and all that. I can keep myself busy and that, and I can go out on the fields and be on my own and that. But people that are living in towns and living in houses on their own, it must be very, very hard and very difficult to stay on your own for so long.
As someone for whom hurling has been a big passion of your life, something as simple as, like we're speaking on Monday night, Tipperary's under 20-side are due to play Munster Championship tonight against Clare, and that's on TV. And all going well, the Munster Senior Championship will start next Sunday, as strange as that maybe seems to be saying, in the middle of October. But something as simple as that, getting to watch a game, that's very important for you.
Very much so, very much so. I wouldn't have many other outings or whatever, you know. Hurling is my main game, always was. But I watch all the other games on television, and that, the soccer and the rugby, and I love horse racing on television. You know, I've never had a race meeting in my life, but I love watching them and watching the winners coming in and listening to the owners and the trainers and that, what they have to say. It's all part of sport, I suppose. And you learn a little. I was listening to Aidan O'Brien one day, the great horse trainer, and he was asked after one of his horses won a big race, this is a couple of years ago, and you know, the reporter asked him to know, did he know his horse was going to win? Well, he said, I knew he was going to run well because he was training with a smile on his face for the last couple of weeks. I thought it was an extraordinary statement, like, and it just brought home to me, you know, that players, hurling teams or whatever teams, they have to be in good form too before they perform well. It brought that home to me. If it's important for a horse, it's surely important for a human to be in good form. And that's where management, good management comes in, that they're able to have their players well brought out and have them have their minds ready for the game and be in a happy mood, not worrying about who they're going to be marking or if they're going to drive balls wide, not be worrying about anything like that. To get out there and enjoy the game, and then you'll play all the better.
Would that have been something you'd always have been conscious of as a manager, trying to get your players in, you know, the various teams that you were involved in, club and county, you know, that the mood was right and that the players were in a good headspace in the week building up to a match?
Oh, very much so, yeah. I think you have to set it up what the opposition are like first and where you're going to be playing and who you're going to be playing and all that sort of stuff. Do that early in the week or the early before the game and build up their minds then that what's in front of them so that they know exactly what's expected of them when they go on the field to play. And to have them in good form, you can't be telling them the opposition are great and they're going to kill somebody and they're all this and that. Don't be blocking their minds and blanking them out a bit. Try and lift their minds that they're open going out to play the game. They're in good form. They know they're well-trained and well-prepared, and they know the opposition, and they know that they can win if they play to their best ability. And I think if you have them in that sort of a mind, you're going to get a great performance from them.
You mentioned there that hurling always has been a passion for you. So I guess it's part of your life from the very, very start. Kilrowan McDonagh's is your club. And I guess the other, I suppose, the early team that kind of struck me that kind of plays a part in your life is St. Flannan's of Ennis, which is interesting. So you have the North Tipperary upbringing, and then you go to Clare for your, I suppose, hurling and academic education.
Yeah. Where I grew up, it was all hurling, and there was nothing else really, you know, no other sport really played around at that time. All the sports have taken their place nowadays. But my father said to me then one day when I was ready to leave Kilrowan School, primary school, he said, would you like to go to the Brothers in Nina or go to St. Flannan's? And I immediately said St. Flannan's because I knew they were big into hurling and there'd be lots of hurling there for me. And indeed there was. I got 5 great years there, you know, and I was more interested in the hurling than I was in the books. But you had to do the books as well. There was a lot of time for studying and all that. And but then every evening, actually, after school, we played hurling for 3/4 of an hour, and then back in for study again. But it was a great opportunity for me or for any young lad like to develop the skills of the game. And you know, when you have the love for it, it is grand to be able to play and get out there and play every evening. And you leave all your worries and your doubts about yourself on the field. you're able to get out there and play. And I think hurling is a great game, that it brings the best out of you. It's a very skillful game. And, you know, people that can't play it are marvel at how the players are able to control the ball. It is such a small ball, it is travelling so fast and all that. It is a marvellous game that way. So your concentration has to be very high and very keen if you want to play well. And I think it suits the Irish psyche, if you like. You know that we're half mad, I suppose, anyway. But it's a wild type of a game that, you know, if you're to play it well, you have to be prepared to win to the tackles and win under the high ball and dropping ball and all that sort of stuff. And it looks often dangerous to the people that aren't used to hurling. But it's not really. Your hurley is there. You have that to protect you. And you have the footwork, I suppose, to get out of the way or get into the way, whatever you want to be, to move around and to be in the right place for the ball. So I think it brings an awful lot out of you. And it makes you feel that much better when you have played a game.
You mentioned the word wild there. You would have played for the Tipperary Senior Hurlers in the 60s. You know, I guess there's stories that have passed down through the years of like the Hell's Kitchen defence, and it's regarded as this hard-hitting type of era. Is that overblown, or was it a very, very different and more physical game back then?
Well, it was a more physical game back then. There's no doubt about that, you know, but Tipperary weren't any more physical than anyone else, you know. All the top teams were physical and strong and stubborn, and there was a lot more ground hurling that time, so that meant there was a lot more contact. And you know, you had to be able to stand up for yourself as well. But Tipperary, of course, you're calling them Hell's Kitchen there. That was the full back line. They were known as Hell's Kitchen. There were John Dyle, Mick Maher, and Kieran Carey, and they were awfully strong men. And, you know, if they brushed off you, they would knock you and hurt you and all the rest. But they weren't dirty men. They weren't hitting guys with hurleys or anything like that. It can be overemphasized, I suppose, you know, that the game wasn't as tidy as it is now. But it was, you know, everyone came out of the game okay. Once you were able to play it at that level, you were the finest, you know.
You came onto that Tip team. I mean, you mentioned John Doyle there. I'm looking here at the team when Tip won the All-Ireland, your first medal in 1964, I think it was. Like, you had John Doyle, Jimmy Doyle. Like, joining a panel with these guys, were these just absolute icons of the game in your eyes? And was it amazing to get to share a dressing with them with them when you came on for the first time?
Unbelievable, really. I remember I was in Flannans and in 1958. I started in 1956, but I was there in 1958, and we used to get the Sunday newspapers. That was all we got at the time. But I remember reading about Tony Wall. He was our Tipperary centre-back that time, and he was made Player of the Year in 1958. He was captain of Tip, who won the All-Ireland. And I was just mesmerised reading the story about him. And a few years later, 1964, which was only about 6 years later, I was playing beside him. So that was a big jump and a big encounter for me. But I found him to be very helpful to me. He coaxed me along. I was wild and pulling on the ball everywhere. I didn't think you had time to rise it, County Hurling, but you had. He was telling me, rise the ball and get it up in your hand and get it away and all that. Very, very helpful to me and brought me along. But it was daunting going in to play with those guys, all right. I remember the first night we went in, we had a match amongst ourselves. And Theo English, who was a famous midfielder at the time and very strong as well, very stubborn strength. He was low to the ground and he couldn't be knocked. But a ball landed between the two of us, about 10 yards apart. And I was coming one way and he was coming the other. So it was going to be a crash. And I said to myself, this is going to be serious now. If you come out of this, you'll be okay. So I took a deep breath and went in as hard as I could. And it didn't knock a funk out of me, really. But it didn't knock one out of him either. You know, he was very strong as well. But it just showed me on that first night, just look, maybe I'm able for this. And I grew from there, I think, and grew into the team and got my place in the team and held it for 10 years or so.
I was looking at your honours list. Between 1964 and 1971, you won 3 All-Ireland medals, 5 Munster Senior, 2 National League, an All-Ireland Under-21 and 2 Munster Under-21. You contested another couple of All-Ireland finals. I mean, it just sounds like the most amazing 8 or 9 seasons. I mean, Tipperary are right there at the business end of it nearly every season.
Yeah. We were lucky at the time, I suppose. Cork had a bit of a downer in those years. They came in 1966, all right, and won an All-Ireland. But they had a few very bleak years up to that. They were our main rivals in Munster. And we were able to beat them and get along and then generally beat Kilkenny in the final or whatever. And Galway at times in the semi-final and that. But we had a very stable team. Jimmy Dyle was a master craftsman. Christy Ringus was to have said that if Jimmy Dyle was as strong as he was, he would have been the best hurler ever. you know, and that was a compliment from Christy Ring, the great Christy Ring. Christy was a very strong man also. But Jimmy was a lovely hurler, stylist hurler.
Was he the best you would have played with, Jimmy?
Oh, he was, yeah, without a doubt. He was the classiest hurler, yeah. He could score points from all angles. And as you said earlier, there it was tougher hurling, harder hurling, and he got it hard. But he was so good at his feet and so quick with the ball that he was able to invite fellas and get in and get in his stroke and get his scores.
It's kind of interesting to think that, you know, Liam Sheedy is now taking Tipperary into action and still it's your team, 64-65, are the last Tipperary side to have retained it. I imagine that's not something you would have thought of, say, after that 65 final, that Tipperary would still be waiting to do two in a row.
That's amazing, really, that it hasn't happened since, you know. Tis with Kilkenny now, they won four in a row, you know, and that's Cork won three in a row, but we didn't get past two in a row. But that's the way it goes. You can be lucky or unlucky. I lost two All-Irelands in a row, 67 and 68 in a row. So it cuts both ways. And you never know. We had a very good team, but of course they started to age, which is the natural thing. And by the middle 60s, they were probably shoving on a bit and younger teams were coming against us and able to beat us and that. So everyone gets their chance and everyone gets good turns and bad turns. And we had a great run in the early 60s and middle 60s along there. We made good use of it.
Yeah, because like that victory in 71 as well, that's your third medal. And I suppose Tipperary then were to endure kind of a long, barren spell. I mean, Richie Stakelam called it the famine had ended when they won in Munster in 87. Like, when you look back now, do you feel maybe an element of good fortune that you were around for a successful period? Because I'm sure there was lots of great Tipperary players that you looked at in the 70s and 80s that they didn't manage to get over the line.
Yes, that's true. I do look back at my career all the time and I say, well, I was lucky. I was in with good players and that, and we had a great time. But it was amazing, the lapse we had from 71 to 87. It was absolutely amazing in a county like Tipperary that's so dedicated to hurling. But we just couldn't get it together. We lost our great manager, who was Paddy Lahey. He wasn't known as a manager. He was chairman of the selection committee that time, and he was a very famous man, and he died, unfortunately, in 1966, I think it was. And he was a huge loss because he was always there. He was the main man. He was more important than the players. He was always there. He was never challenged to lose his place as the selector, as the main selector. And so everything was stabilized and that. And then it was destabled when he went, and things started to change, and people started to talk and write stories on the paper. Tipperary are picking the wrong team and all this sort of stuff built up. And a sort of a mental block came in and we just weren't able to win a championship match, never mind win a championship. But you can get careless too when you're going very well. We probably got careless in the 60s that we didn't look after our minors and that. Our minors weren't winning. They stopped winning. And why was that? You know, and I'd say there wasn't much he'd put in them because the seniors were doing well anyway. That was the main thing. But we forgot about the future when the seniors were gone, those teams were gone, that we needed the good players again. And we didn't have enough of good players coming together. You need to get a fair bunch of players together to have a good team, to develop a good team. And the team has been chopped and changed in around all the time. So there's a lot of instability and there was a lot of anger and all that as well around it as well. So we lost our way for a bit. Finally, we got back in 1987.
Where did management come into it for you then? Was it something you always thought about, maybe when your playing days were coming to a close? Or did you, like a lot of people, maybe did you just fall into it with the club and then it just kind of grew from there?
Well, I remember we were talking in the dressing room one day with that team now that I was with in the 60s, and the fellas were saying, you know, what will you do when you're finished hurling? And we were all agreed that we wouldn't have anything more to do with it. We wouldn't go into management.
Really?
And this was, yeah. And the funny thing, well, of course, I was from a country club, Kilrone McDonagh's, and when the county man is there, the Lord sort of looked to him to help things out and do things. And I was asked to go in as a minor manager in around 1970, and I was still hurling with Tipperary. And it was a foolish thing to do, to take on too much, you know. But I got into it, and I got to like it, and we had success. We won a minor county championship, which we had never won before. We went on then, I was promoted into the under-21s and that. And we had great success there as well, and we won four or five county championships in the under 21. And from that, we built a good senior team, and we won three county championships in a row, 1977, 78, and 79. So I just got into it by chance that I was asked to do it, And I said, well, look, sure, I'll do my best. And I actually remember I was a selector with Tipperary minor teams, and I was still playing on the Tip senior team. And against Limerick in 1973, I was on the sideline for the minor match, and we won that. And then I was tonked out for the senior match, and we lost that. People were saying, you shouldn't have been, you know, you were killing yourself and tying yourself out, which I probably was. It was too much, really, to try and do the two. But you get woven into these things, and it's hard to give up and say, no, I'm not going to do it. You couldn't do that to your club anyway.
And obviously you get a taste of success. I mean, you've touched on it there. I mean, we've talked about how difficult it is retaining titles on the county sense, but like in the club sense, I mean, to do three in a row with Kilroe on between 77 and 79, to come back and do it again in 85. And then obviously 85 was the start of the greatest season in the club's history.
That's right, yeah. We had a few down years after we won the three in a row, and we were actually beaten by 1 point for four in a row in the county final. And then we had a few years that we weren't successful at all in the early 80s. And then we got going again in 1985 and built up a great team and got to the county final. And we were lucky enough to beat Roscrea in that county final. They were beating us well at half time, but we kept our cool. That was one thing about the team. When a team is mature, they keep their cool and keep their positions and that. And we did, and we worked out a victory in the second half. And that puts us in the running then for the club championship. And I regretted not putting more effort into winning the club championship before that. We had been in it, of course, but we hadn't really knuckled down to it. We just played the games. But I said to the boys, it's time for us to try and win a Munster championship anyway, and we get serious about this. And our first match was against Tallow in Waterford, and I had never heard of them. I knew that Ned Power, the great Waterford goalkeeper, was from there, but that was all I knew. And I didn't rate them, really, because I hadn't heard of them. But I happened to meet Donny Nealon, who was the Munster secretary at the time, and he would have to be at all those matches. And they had played Wexford, I think, Kerry team in the Waterford in the first round of the Munster Championship. And I asked him to know what were Tallow like. He says, they're right good. You have to be very careful. They're a right good team. And so I was ready then, and we had a whopper of a match. 118 to 117, the middle of November. It was tit for tat, and they were leading led the whole way through. And we got a goal in the end to win it. And that puts us then into the Munster final with the great Black Rock team from Cork at the time. And their father, Michael O'Brien, was manager.
Of course, yeah.
Man in his day, too. And they had Frank Cummins and Kilkenny. He was hurling with them at that time. I think he's still living in Cork. And they had a Westmeath man then as well, and he had got an odds there. He was a very good hurler. And they had the McCurtains and McCashman and all those, Eamon Donoghue. Not inter-county players. And it wasn't felt that we beat them. But we hurled them very well, and we were winning coming up to the end, and they got a draw. They got a free to level it in the last minute, and they did. And everyone said our chance was gone. That you won't beat Cork in the second time. And by God, I said to myself, that got me going a bit. And I said to myself, sure, a Tipperary team has his right to be a fair bit for a match as a Cork team, you know, because we were there, thereabouts with them in the All-Ireland reckoning. And I jumped it into the bias for the week. It was only a week between them. And we beat them double scores in the replay a week later. And it was an absolutely terrific performance by our team. You know, they gave absolutely everything they had. Cork were very good, you know, and we still beat them. It was only 6 points to 12, but, you know, it was fair scoring on a heavy, heavy conditions and a wet day. So that put us in line then for the All-Ireland. We said, should we go for it all now at this stage? And it was a team from London that time, Desmond's, St. Desmond's. They came over and played us in our home ground. So we were able to beat them handy enough. And we played Turlopmore from Galway. In the All-Ireland semi-final. And we beat them. And then we were in the All-Ireland final against Buffers Alley, Tony Dorn's team. He was the star man in their team. And so up to Croke Park for that. We went by train. The train's from Clochjordan, our parish. And three loads of people went to that match. It was unreal. People that were never in Croke Park wouldn't be able to get a ticket or we wouldn't travel that distance. But they all went on the train. They got on this train. The team were on the train. The whole lot up to them.
What was that morning like locally? It must have been the most amazing atmosphere in the village.
It was absolutely alive. People were just alive. They couldn't wait to get to Croke Park to see what it was like and see their players playing in it, you know. And the match was great, and Buffers Alley were well able for us. They were leading all the way through. and leading at half time, and we got into it in the second half, and we put up a great performance in the second half. And in the last couple of minutes, we got a couple of scores to win. Gilbert Williams scored a 70 or 65 and get the winning point, I think it was. Jerry Williams scored a point before that. But it was a great battle, and it was a great victory. And people, you know, as I said, were never in Croke Park before. They couldn't believe that the Kilmarnock Dunnets team were after coming to Croke Park and beating the champions from Wexford. And home in the train with the Tommy Murphy Cup, I think they called it at that time, and the singing and everything that went on in the train going home was
amazing.
And a great night in Clochard that night then as well. There was no virus around at that time.
You could all stay close together.
We could all stay close together, and we did. Yeah. Great memories, and, you know, great team, and it gives a great lift to everybody, really. You know, they feel good about themselves when their team do well. I firmly believe that the team are only part of the people of the parish, and they're the people, the team are the people that are representing the parish. And I think the parish push them on when they want them to win. You know, they live through the matches, and they love to see their team winning. That's true of all clubs, I'd say. But we had that tremendously strong feeling that time in Killarney, that we were able to take on everyone we met and beat them and win that All-Ireland trophy. And it stands there as a monument to us, to those players since.
Because I suppose the lifeblood of the GA is the local rivalries. You've seen other clubs that have won County Tipperary titles, that maybe have won Munsters, but just haven't managed to get over the line for the All-Ireland. So I imagine that's a special thing in your club, that one of your teams did get over the line.
Oh, it is very special, very special. Joe Connolly from Galway, he told a good story about he was going up to the All-Ireland club final. I don't know which one. There was a Galway team in it anyway. They had Joe Cooney's team. But he was talking to this fellow on the train going up, and he says to him, you're not from any of these clubs, you know. No, he says. And he said, will you be shouting for them? I'll be shouting for them, all right, he says, but I hope they won't win. They'll be rivals at home in Galway. So, you know, you'd have the rivalry, but you would still cheer them on, you know. And we had a lot of people from outside our parish that cheered us on that year too, and we really appreciated that. And it was great to see them getting on the train as well. A lot of those people travelled on the train with us to get on Inine and came out to Clochard and picked us up. All that sort of stuff. It's great. And that's what we're missing now at the moment, you know, through the virus, that we're not able to congregate and meet and shout on our team and cheer them on and have a bit of crack them at the opposition as well, like tell them how bad they are and some things like that. But hopefully that'll all disappear too. We'll go back to the good times.
You didn't just, I suppose, stick with Kilrowan at that time. I mean, you had a lot of success with clubs. I'm looking at Moycarkey Boris and Clonilty Rossmore, you won Tipperary senior titles with. That then led on to 1991. You were approached by another county, Clare, to be their senior hurling manager. The decision to kind of go outside, you know, your own parish and county, was that something you would have, I don't know, agonised about? Or did you just always enjoy being involved with a hurling team, whoever asked you to get on board?
Yeah, well, I always enjoyed being with teams, but it's a different thing to go outside your county, you know. I didn't really relish that at all. I didn't want to go, and I refused. And the county chairman, Brendan Bohan, persevered and rang again, and he says, will you meet me at least, you know? And I said, I will meet you. And we met in Limerick, in a hotel in Limerick, and he talked me into it anyway. And, of course, I was conscious of the 5 years I gave in St. Flannan's as well, and all the hurling I got there, and all the coaching I got there from Clare Priest as well as Tipperary Police and from different places. But I definitely got great benefit there from the hurling that I got there. So I said, sure, maybe I'll try and give something back if I can. And I went to Clare.
So if another county had approached you, maybe you wouldn't have been as receptive. Was it because you had that maybe, you know, I suppose link and kind of maybe the heartstrings are being kind of tugged towards Ennis a little bit?
Yeah, I'd say I wouldn't have gone only for that link. If I hadn't made any plans, I definitely wouldn't have gone. You know, I wasn't keen on going at all. But looking back on it now, you know, the fellas are crisscrossing all over the country now, and it makes no difference at all. And I think it's rightly so as well, that if you can help out, someone do.
That decade obviously ends up being one which Clare probably are the biggest storyline about around, and you're there at the very, very start of it. What was your, I suppose, impression, and like, how was Clare hurling at the time? What sort of players were around when you were starting out?
Yeah, well, they had a couple of very bad years just before I went there. and things were poor enough. And actually, I didn't realize it. Nobody told me, but they had very grave difficulty getting selectors.
Okay.
With me, you know, I said, you get the selectors and have them ready, and I go. So they seemed to have a lot of bother to get, and nobody wanted to take on the job. And but eventually we did. Bishop Willie Welsh came in. He was the ordinary father, Willie Welsh, that time. And he came in, and Tony Kelly, I think it was, with me as well. And we got going. But I found it to be very honest, decent players and anxious to do well and didn't know really why they weren't doing well. They couldn't understand it, or they couldn't, you know, they hadn't looked into it deeply enough to know, you know, could we possibly be better? And I tried to talk that into them, tried to get a bit of belief into them as well as everything else. Because if you haven't that belief, if you go out to play and you just think, well, you know, we'll do the best we can, but we know they're going to beat us, you're beaten already. So to try and break down that barrier and get them to play at their best then. And we had some great victories. You know, we Limerick beat us the first year, and Waterford beat us nearly the second year, but we beat Limerick then maybe the third, we beat Limerick anyway at one stage, and we beat Cork in the Munster semi-final, and then we allowed Tip to murder us in that final as well. And then the following year in the first round, we beat Tip in the first round, you know. So we had our ups and downs in it, and I could see that they were developing and getting there. But I felt I had 4 years given to them. I felt it was enough, really, that it was time for someone else to take over. And I knew that Gerard Lucknane was available to take over, you know. So he took over, and of course he brought them on leaps and bounds. He put that real steel into them. He drove them. He could see how far we had gone, and he could see how far they needed to go, and much more they needed to do. And he did that. He drove that into them, and he built them into a very, very formidable team, and a hard team to beat. And it was his strength of character, I say, that did that.
So he worked with you as a selector, just towards your end of your time in Clare. How can you tell us a bit about that? Like, what was he like then? Did you see this guy was going to go on to be, I suppose, one of the most formidable managers around and successful?
Well, the funny thing was that he had been manager of Clare under 21 team a couple of years before that, previous to that, and they got into a Munster final against Waterford, and it looked like a game they should have won, and they didn't. And sort of the blame was put on Gerald Dan for that. And the Clare people in the county board, they sort of ruled him out, you know. But I looked for him my last year there as a selector, and they didn't want it. And I said, sure, well, if he's not going to be a selector, I'm going. So they said, okay. So and he looked to go to be a selector, and whenever Langaner left, he would take over. And he got that concession. So he was there ready to take over, and he was part of the outfit in our last year, 1994. And I could see immediately that he was a terrific coach. Anyway, he was a brilliant coach and great at devising drills and all that sort of stuff, and very good. But he didn't show his real character at that stage. He didn't show that real steely determination that he showed when he did take over, you know. But I knew they'd be in safe hands when he was taking over anyway. And I did think that they would win a Munster Championship very soon, but I didn't see them winning the All-Ireland so soon, you know.
So the rate of the progress, I mean, like you would have had the likes of Anthony Daly at that stage, but maybe kind of younger players, they started to come along in the couple of years after. The rate of the progress that they made surprised you?
It surprised me that it came so quickly, yeah. But I could see and hear, Gerard was all over the place at that stage. You'd hear him on the radio, and you'd read about him in the papers, and you could see that he had fire in his eyes, and that he was going to drive them. And sure, we had most of those players were there already. Brian Lohan and all those, David Fitz in the goals, Shawny McMahon was there, James O'Connor was there, Sparrow was there, Daly, all those lads were there. And he brought them up those few steps that they needed to come up, you know. But they certainly developed into a very strong team, and they showed about winning two All-Irelands.
You could see that potential, though, in the likes of Davey and Brian Lohan. I mean, they've become absolute icons within Clare. Like, I suppose when you were working at them with them, they were just kind of starting out on their senior hurling journey.
Oh yeah, you could see that they had it, you know. They definitely had the ability, and they definitely had that bit of steel, but they needed extra. When you haven't won, it's very hard to convince yourself that you can beat Tipperary or Cork or Kilkenny or someone, you know, when you're down to play them. And that's where Gerard Lucknane came in, that he did drive that extra belief into them. He trained them savagely, and they were super fit and strong, and they were well-trained. They were strong for hurling, which you need to be. And then he got their minds strong as well. And so once they went out then, and then they met Limerick in the Munster final and started a bit shaky, but they got going. They got a goal. Davy, I think, scored a goal from the penalty. And they got going in that match, and they never looked back after that. Then, once they got the first victory under their belts, they flew it and went on to win the All-Ireland, beating Offaly in the final.
We're now just seconds away from the longest bridge in hurling, the 63-year gap that Clare has waited to take the Munster Cup. Fergal Hegarty, aware that he might have been hooked, going for the score.
What was it like for you managing against your own county when you were with Clare? Like you mentioned those games, 93 and 94, you've different experiences in terms of the results. I mean, the 94 seems like it was a big win for Clare hurling, maybe in kind of, I don't know, smashing that kind of psychological barrier. Was it difficult for you in the build up to those games and in the aftermath?
Well, sure, look, you'd rather be playing against somebody else. You know, it was nice playing against your own county, and it was very awkward, really. And I would have felt bad about it, but then when I was with the team, I was with the team, and I gave them everything I had and did my best for them to win. And you'd have to be that way and loyal to your team as well. And it was a big win to beat them in 94 after they beat us 18 pints, I think, in the Munster final the previous year. And we were drawn against them in the first round the following year. And we set the goal to try and beat them, you know. And if Clare could beat Tipperary, they could beat anyone. No, there was a barrier there. There's no doubt about the psychological barrier there that they couldn't get over these big teams. And they weren't meant to get over these big teams, certainly, you know. But having beaten Tip then in that, the door was open for him. Unfortunately, we went on and we lost the Munster final after to Limerick. But the barrier had been broken or had been knocked down a bit anyway. And so they were ripe for the big stage and to go that extra mile.
And then, of course, Len, you were directly involved when Clare were winning their second All-Ireland in 97. You, like, when you left Clare, were you thinking, you know, I'll park management for a while, or did you have a kind of a pull to get back involved with Tipperary? Did you see it coming?
I didn't see it coming. No, I didn't. And I had no desire to go anywhere again, training anyone else. I never looked for any of these jobs. And next thing, the Tipperary chairman at the time, Sean Fogarty, arrived to me and asked me to take over Tipperary. And, you know, your own county, it was hard to say no there. So I was delighted to take them over and get involved again. And we ran straight into Clare, of course, immediately. And that was tough. It was hard. It was hard when they beat us. It was terrible in the All-Ireland final. I found it very difficult. They beat us by a point in the All-Ireland final. Well, it is hard to lose a final any time, but I was able to take defeat fairly well. You know, you'd be down and out, and you'd be very, very disappointed, but you'd shake it off. But I found it hard to shake that off. Now, that was an awful blow to be beaten in the All-Ireland final, especially by one point. You know, you look at so many things we could have done that might have won it for us, you know. But Clare were a terrific team at the time, and, you know, we have to take our hats off to them and congratulate them. And that's all I could do when the match was over. But it did hurt.
When you say how difficult it was to take, is part of that the fact that that was the first year of the back door, so you'd met them in a Munster final, there was a bit of rivalry, or was it the fact you'd been involved with them? Or is it just your manager of your own county, no matter who you lose to, but in those circumstances, it's going to be difficult?
Yeah, it's just trying to win with your own county. You're trying to win with the team that you're with, you know. I wanted to win as badly with Clare as I did to be with Tip. But to just to win when you were there, you have the opportunity and you have to try and take it. And it wasn't really so much that it was Clare at all. It was just the fact that we were beaten and maybe we could have won it. You know, that goes deep into you. But you survive it and you get over it and you come again. There's always another year.
Because I suppose that year you had done so well in the sense you beat Wexford and Limerick, the two teams that contested the All-Ireland final the year before. You'd shown the resolve to come back against Clare after the Munster final. And it kind of, I suppose it stands out as one of those finals. It's just, unfortunately for you, it's such fine margins. Johnny Lahey's chance at the end, previous to that, James O'Connor gets the point. It's kind of remembered as one of those kind of dramatic All-Ireland finals, the way it ended.
Yeah. It is, but just all these big games generally end that way, you know, if they're close. We were doing very well in the first half, and then Clare came out immediately after half-time and got level and went ahead and looked to be on their way. and we got back in him again. Liam Cahill came in and scored a goal. Eugene O'Neill scored a goal. And we were back in the game again, and we were actually winning by a pint. And the losing of it really was the puck out. Davey took a very quick puck out after we scored our second goal. And nobody, actually the television cameras didn't even get it. It's not on the cameras.
Okay.
And our players didn't get it either. They didn't see it. And he took a quick puck out and hit it out to Ollie Baker. And Ollie Baker let fly and straight over the bar. So we had been winning by a pint for about 10 seconds. And it was knocked back to level game again.
Sherlock Dan won't care too much about names taken or fines later on if his side can hang on for dear life to victory here. This to put just a point between the teams. Real pressure for Tommy Dunn. 5 points so far in this match. 4 minutes left. He drives it in and he drives it and it's stopped in there. And it's in the back of the net! Another goal! And it's Eugene O'Neill who's got it! Tipperary are ahead by a point. They were hoping to narrow the gap. Tommy Dunn knocked this one in for the side beaten in this year's Munster final by Clare, and Eugene O'Neill was the one who reacted quickly. 3 minutes from the end or thereabouts. A real body blow now for the Bannermen. But even as we watch the replay of that, they've gone downfield and Ollie Baker has put the ball over the bar for his second point. It's a wonderful contest. They're level for the fourth time in this All-Ireland final. How much time will the referee allow? Another 3 minutes still to play.
That was the winning point for me, really, for Clare, because the pressure was off now. They had at least a draw, and all they had to do now was get another point to win it. Now, that's all we had to do as well. But we had gone ahead at a crucial time with 2 minutes to go, and here we lost it so quickly. And that really was hard, you know, because all we had to do was break the ball at midfield and it wouldn't have gone in near it at all. But, you know, that's the way the game goes. Ollie Baker was alert. David Fitzgerald was alert. They got the quick puck out. It happened in the county final at Tipperary here this year as well. John McGrath scored the winning pint with time up. And the goalie, he had the ball pucked out before the flag was raised for the pint.
Yeah,
and they're really allowed it, and it went up the field, and Kildangan got a ball to win the game. So, you know, those things happen, and you have to live with it.
You're involved in Tipperary then, I suppose, after that. There was obviously disappointment the following year, the way it ended as senior manager, but, you know, you had various roles between the under-21 team, the intermediate team. But I'm wondering if you can talk to me a bit about your time as a Tipperary supporter. Your son Brian obviously had roles with different Tipperary teams. Your daughter Kira had amazing success. So, you know, we've talked about you as a Tip player and manager, but what was it like then looking on at your own children achieving things in Tipperary colours?
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard to give up the hurling. I found it very hard to give up hurling when I was finished. You know, I didn't finish in a hurry. I didn't until I was into my 40s. I went down to even junior level and stayed at it, but eventually I had to give it up. But it's very hard. It is a part of your life that's gone that you can't retrieve again. You know, you can come back at most things, but you can't come back at a hurling game because you just haven't got the power in your body to do it. And for me, it was the finish of part of my life and a big part of my life. And I found that very hard. But as you say, Brian was a very good hurler, and he was unlucky with an injury to his finger. It left his finger crooked. It just did crooked all the time, and he started to drop a few balls and that. But he was a very good hurler and got a kick out of watching him. And all the lads hurled. They hurled here with Kilwan McDonough's and that. And Kira came along then on the Camogie team, and it was absolutely terrific watching her and watching the Camogie team. She won five All-Irelands with Tip. They had a great team that time. And it was lovely watching them. You know, it was the next best thing to playing yourself. But I get a great kick out of following all the hurling matches and watching the game. I think the game is marvellous now. It has developed and evolved. And it's a smashing game. It's so fast now, and they're so good at under control of the ball, and they can play the game at such a fast pace. Of course, they're trained to the ounce. They're really, and they're fed to the ounce as well. They're eating all the right foods, and everything is right now. They have all these advisors, but they're really showing it on the field when they play. I marvel at that. I love to see it, and I just. No matter who's playing in a hurling match, if I could get to it, I'd get to it and watch and see what's going on and watch out for new players coming along and all that sort of stuff. So it's still there. The fire has gone out as regards actually play. I know now that I'm never going to be able to play again. But the fire hasn't gone out about watching the game and enjoying the game. And yeah, it has been a long road, and a very enjoyable road for me, like playing hurling and being involved in hurling. And to see my family coming along, a lot of the kids used to follow me when I'd be training other teams, and when I'd be training Kilmarnock, they'd always come to the matches, come to the training sessions, and they'd be playing around behind the goals or whatever, you know. And that integrated them into the game as well, I suppose. And it helped me a bit. I didn't feel as guilty walking away and leaving all the kids at home to Ireland, you know. We had 7 kids, and I'd take the strongest of many when she'd be able to manage the rest. So it cut both ways, you know. I enjoyed taking them, they enjoyed going, and Ireland got a bit of a rest, a bit of a break anyway at home. So it was part of our life, and that, and a lovely part of our life. And hurling to me is just a spiritual, nearly, you know. It's nearly, I don't know, I couldn't say enough about it, good about it. It fills your whole being with goodness and that. You can't, look at, you'd have bad days like the lasses and all that, and you'll get injured or whatever, or get a wallop, and to be sore and all that. But basically, deep down, hurling and playing the game is the best feeling you could ever have.
Just to bring you back, Lynn, to that time when Kira was successful, that must have been just a lovely, lovely journey to be going to all these matches. It was like a great time for Tipperary Camogie, and to have your daughter involved. And I mean, you've, as you said, you've played in All-Ireland wins in Croke Park, you've managed your club, but to kind of see one of your own, I suppose, play and succeed, it's got to be very special.
Very special. She was a lovely player always, and we'd be hurling at home in the yard. She'd be taking shots at me. We'd have a sponge ball, and she'd be taking shots at me. And the other girls would too. They all had to go, and they were good. They were quite good, the whole lot of them. But she was that bit extra. She played like a man, really. Whether that's a nice thing to say or not, I don't know. But she played like a man in my eyes. She was very strong and very steady, and had a great puck. And I'd be sort of in the goals with the wall behind me, and she'd bore him at me, and I'd just catch him, no bother, you know. And I'd deny her, she'd be annoyed with that. But of course, she got a bit stronger and a bit older, and I got a bit weaker and a bit older as well, the wrong way. But eventually, she could drive the ball through me. I wouldn't be able to stop her. She was so strong. She had a great puck. But we had great crack, and we'd be fooling each other and pretending we were this one and that one and doing this and the other thing. Yeah, it was great because all the family were involved and they all got some sort of a kick out of it. And watching her play then and play so well, she was a great centre-back. She could read the game as well. She had a good head on her and a good stroke of a ball and very solid. And it was lovely. 5 All-Irelands is a fair achievement, you know. And
absolutely, yeah.
I'm very proud of her.
Just finally, before we leave you go, you've mentioned that you've stopped playing, but I know maybe up until this year when the season was interrupted, like, you're still coaching, you've still been helping out kind of the very young players that are starting out with your club, Kilwan. You still get a great kick out of that?
Yeah, I do. Unfortunately, we had none this year now on account of the virus. I didn't want bringing them, I suppose, you know, it wouldn't have been right. And but what I do is I do beginners. I mean, anyone that wants to come can come, they say, up to 10 or 12 years of age. But I do a few little things with them first, and then I would put the good lads together and fix them up the match and maybe put someone in charge of them. But I'd hold on to the beginners, and they're a pure howl on together, you know. And to see the satisfaction out of them when they're able to rise the ball, you know, it is a huge achievement in their lives. And I get a kick out of that. My grandchildren will be there as well, maybe some of them. There was one little lad, he was 6, Colin was his name. And I had a match among the small lads, and they'd have the helmets on, of course, and everybody, it was hard enough to recognise them. And I was behind this chap, and he hit a great ball up the field. And I said, "Good man, Tommy." And Colin looked around at me like, "You don't know your own grandson is." He stuck me to the road. I didn't realise it was him, you know. But they're great because they're so natural. And there's no ego about them or anything like that. They just do whatever you ask them to do. And when they hit the ball, they think they're great. You know, I'd be telling them they're Shamie Cannon or they're this one or that one or the other one. And they love all that sort of stuff, you know. I coached in schools as well, going around and in the primary schools and that. And I was in one school one day. Well, I was going in every week into it. And all the class would come out, boys and girls, good lads, bad lads, a whole lot have to come out. And One had just come out. They were about 7 years of age now, these lads. And one had just come out and he'd have his overcoat on. To be this time of year, to be cold enough maybe. But he wouldn't even look at the ball. He had no interest whatsoever in hurling, you know. And he'd be just, and I'd be feeling sorry for him. I'd say, run over as far as the ball there, like, time you're coming back. And I'd be looking at me watching, making him feel good about it, trying to get him going. But anyway, he didn't. And after a few weeks, anyway, he came out one day and he gave a few jumps and he hit the ground with his hurley a few times, you know, before any match started. And I said, listen, this was changed a little bit, you know. But and when the match was over, I was giving out accolades. I said, you got the best pint and you got the best goal and you hit the longest puck. And I could see your man looking at me, you know, hoping to get something. I said, but you were the most improved player here today. And he went off, and that was it. But about 2 years later, sometime later, I was given a coaching course in that club. And there was a break at half time and we had a cup of tea and this woman came up to me. I had no idea who she was. And she says to me, you told my young lad that he was the most improved player in the field. And I remembered it straight away. And she said, it was a turning point in his life.
Amazing.
Wasn't it? I mean, a few simple words. Now, I know that she didn't mean that he was going to be a great hurler. She meant he came out of himself and developed into a grand young lad. I don't know where he is now. He'd be 5 or 6 years old now, older now, you know. But I thought the power of the couple of words, the good words that I said to him, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't conscious that I was going to lift him. But it's amazing, and it shocked me a bit as well, because you could say, well, what are you looking at? Or why didn't you hit that over the bar? Or something wrong, maybe. And you'd put him the other way. So I was delighted to hear it. And it taught me a big lesson that, you know, Mullen Oig agus Siúca Siad. And if you're given that bit of praise, they will come.
Len Gaynor, you've been absolutely fantastic with your time today. I hope you get to enjoy the 2020 Championship over the next couple of months and that we kind of get back to maybe some sort of normality in the GA world and beyond in 2021. Thanks a million for joining us today.
Thank you, Fintan. Thanks very much.
So that was Len Gaynor, the Tipperary man who has had such an interesting hurling career. Thanks a million to him for making the time to chat to us. We do appreciate it and hope you enjoyed listening to that. Thanks as always to you, the 42 members, for your continued support in helping us to keep this going. We're going to be taking a break with the Warriors GA series now for a while, but we've got a really exciting new podcast in the pipeline where we're planning to focus on the upcoming 2020 GA Championship with a couple of big names coming on board with us to drive on our coverage over the coming weeks. So keep an eye out for that, which should be available to you soon. As always, please do get in touch with us about anything GA related. You can email fintan@the42.ie or tweet us @the42GAA. Thanks a lot for listening. Take care, and we'll chat to you soon.
They compared throne to the British Army. Once we crossed the border, we had no power. I think we've a better power now.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.